Dear Dhamma friends, today is our fourth day in the retreat. Accordingly, we are going to get the access to the fourth Dhamma talk. To start the Dhamma talk, you may give the consent with the three times sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ඉමං චේව තුම්මේ භික්ඛවේ දික්ඛින් ඒවං පරිසුත්තං ඒවං පරියෝදාතං අල්ලීයේත කේලායේත මනාධනායේත මමායේත අපිනුතුම් මේ භික්ඛවේ කුල්ලූපවන් ධම්මං දේශිතං ආජානියා තාති නෝ හේතං බන්තේති කිය ධම්ම ෆ්‍රෙන්ඩ්ස් for the last 3 days we tried the way that particular sutta මහා තණ්හා සංකේ සුත්‍ර lead us so that Buddha is giving the way how to get rid of these doubts or not to entertain doubts. That means whenever someone is in a quest or in search, he or she has to have a number of ways or which one is the best method is always a problem. So therefore, many are in trying to understand the proper way. And as far as you are trying, you are changing the one method to the other method, one teacher to the other teacher, one meditation center to the other meditation center, so much so. We simply call this whole operation as trying. But when and where you come to know this is the method which is more suitable for me, more appropriate for me, then or not you are no more trying, but striving starts. So from trying to striving, there's a huge difference. Trying, endless way, the wastage of energy. And there's no other way. So once you try, then comes to know by your own judgment, then only you start striving. In order to strive upon one or the other method, you must have a certain amount of credibility, certain amount of clarity and believing character, otherwise you will not strive. So in order to have this striving, you must be fairly free from doubts. That is one of the basic thing one has to understand. So therefore, as far as you are trying, the time, this money, everything, there is no limits. When and where you start striving only, you come to know at least the method you strive is wrong. Because you have the first hand experience. So from trying to striving is a long way. So that is the part in this particular sutta, the Buddha, he says that if you are to understand whether this consciousness is a permanent, everlasting thing, or it is a nihilistic thing, starting and ending up in this here and now, or whether it is everlasting. That is a kind of a view. It was throughout the life. So if you are to verify it, one day you have to select a method and start striving for that. The Buddha says one has to understand the very arising of the phenomena, and whenever you are ready to see the very conception, very arising, then you are better off regarding the background information, and you will come to know when and where you to see the beginning. There are some causative factors, decisive factors, proximate factors are specific for that particular experience to take place. So more and more you go to the beginning, you are to see the whole the phenomena in terms of beginning, the middle and the end. So you are bound to see the specific cause has specific effect, specific effects has specific cause, and this is never happen in a singular way, it is always plural. Many causes are going to give many results. There is nothing in the world that single cause going to give a single result. So therefore, even though in a reductionist way you select one thing and try to see the beginning, practically that is the only way available. So whenever you go there, you come to know each and every phenomena, each and every experience, it has its own specific causes. And to understand that very causes, as and when it arises, you must be right there, well prepared. If you are delayed, or if you are negligent to the very beginning, the lot of hypothesis, theorization, philosophizing, doubts, many things can happen. In order to get rid of this whole bewilderment, as and when the phenomena arises, you have to write they are, you have to be very diligent, you have to be very vigilant, then only you can understand what are the causes for that particular effect. So therefore, more you go to the root cause, more you have to understand the proximate causes in really. And more you have to understand this approximate cause or immediate cause, you will see as and when these causes are come into alignment, which are going to happen, when and where are these causes going to ceases to exist, result also going to ceases to exist. So whenever that you understand or you nearing to the absolute understanding, your doubts regarding not only the particular object that you have selected, you can find it is applicable for wherever it possible, along the time-wise and the space-wise, more and more you to understand cause, more and more you to understand the inception, conception and the beginning, more and more you to see the whole phenomena. So that is the teaching of the Buddha, to go to the root cause. And that is, in an episode it says, the chief disciple of the Buddha is known as Venerable Sariputta, and he had another colleague called Moggallana. As the lay people, they are separate names. Both of them are well-to-do, families from well-to-do, and well-educated from the contemporary teachings. But they were not happy, they were not contented, so they went in search of the truth. One day it happened to meet one of the disciples of the Buddha, and observing the behavior, the demeanor of the disciple, Kolita, the one of them, was so happy to see him and just followed him. And that particular monk, at that moment, was on arms rounds. So after collecting enough food, he sat aside in the road and started taking the meal. So this young man also went there and offered assistance and attendance and gave all the kind of things. Then asked that, Bante, that I am very happy to meet you. You appear to be very calm and quiet and contented. I would like to know what is the teaching you are following, who is your teacher. Then he told, I am very young to this dispensation, therefore I am not much good in giving a Dhamma talk. Then layman called as Kolita told, never mind Bhante, try your best. I can understand in thousand ways and I can understand in many ways, therefore please try. And at that time he uttered one single stanza, Ye Dhamma Hetu Pabhava Te Sanghetum Tasagato Aha. Whatever the phenomena arising from the root cause, my teacher is master to find the root cause. Whatever the Dhamma, whatever the phenomena, whatever the experience going to happen, it is always with its due root cause. My master is asking us always to see the root cause. By just mere listening to these two stages, it was enough for him to get his first stage of enlightenment. But anyway, that particular monk kept on preaching, Tesanchayo Nirodho Evangvadi Mahasamano. Not only observing the very root cause, he or she is patiently observed to the point where the root causes are ceases to exist. Then resultant phenomena, the resultant experience also ceases to exist. That is the cessation, kind of cessation my teacher is prescribing. So this is the exact thing here also. The Buddha says whether you are taking the consciousness as your subject matter, or whether you are going to take your volitional activities as a subject matter, or your perception, or your feelings, or your corporeal body, whatever it may be, the already arisen thing won't explain the whole picture. You have to see the beginning of it, the arising part of it. When and where you find, you are bound to see, you destined to see, it's a root cause, and you have to be patiently observe the arising, the beginning, middle, and the end of the very root cause. The cessation of the root cause means resultant effect also ceases to exist. So after giving that kind of a profound teaching to the monks gathered at that time, then the Buddha make a kind of a specific remark, Imancheva tumme bhikkave ditti evam parisuddham evam pariyodaka. Because purified and bright as this is, what the Buddha explained is very bright and very purified kind of view. If you only study this for the sake of theory, this theory for the sake of theory, or if you just cherish it as a very bright and very purified kind of, and if you are going to treasure it as this is, I would like to study and I would like to claim it as my theory, my view and my philosophy. And if that is the case, Buddha says, are you going to really make use this Dhamma the way the Buddha is explaining? Then the monk says, no. The teaching is not to just cherish the theory as theory, or brilliant, bright, purified theory, or to cherish it, or to claim it as mine. That means you are not really making use it. My teaching is just like a raft. It is to cross over to the other side, and after crossing over, not to carry over your head. Leave it aside at the other shore, because raft is only useful till you are crossing the water. It is no use in the dry land. So therefore you must use this Dhamma in a practical way, in a utility way. Otherwise, what happens is, you are going to be sectarianism. My Dhamma is brighter than others. My philosophy is purified than others. So therefore you will try to compare it with the other things, and that is how this sectarianism can come into being. And you get committed with the particular Dhamma rather than you study it, rather than you put into practice. If you are going to just cherish it, it will ultimately be a burden to you just to maintain it. And you try to make it a reason to boost up your ego by this taking Dhamma as me, mine and myself. So therefore, even though this presentation is so bright, even though this presentation is so purified, the Buddha, right from the beginning, it says, don't try to adhering to it in a theory for the sake of theory way, or don't try to cherish it, and don't pressure it, and don't possess it, just to boost up your ego, just to boost up your conceit, just to add yet another item for you to get desired of. Instead, use it as a raft. So this is a kind of a good message to USA. Because present-day Buddhism in the America is called business Buddhism. Everything, whenever you come to know a little bit of Dhamma, you make a commodity, you try to sell it in order to have some healing effects, in order to have some therapeutic effect, and then compare it, the value of Dhamma on its therapeutic value or healing value, that's very dangerous. First and foremost, for a person, he tried to bring this Vipassana meditation to America was an Indian person known as Munindra Ji. His name was Munindra, and the Ji is one of the honorary name. And he used to be a Mahashi method, used to, Mahashi system, and he was a founder teacher in the IMS, Insight Meditation Society, at the bar in Massachusetts. And he was a successful person, and many understood, many tried to understand what he is talking about, and many there were followers. But when he come back to India, he told, very difficult to predict that Dhamma is going to make a big difference in USA because all the people using Dhamma for therapeutic value, only for the healing effect. So therefore, they are not using it to cross over to the other shore. They are using Dhamma to live happily in this life and make it another luxurious thing for their possessions. So this is something, though I am taking this U.S. as an example, even in Sri Lanka, that is what it happens. Even in traditional Buddhist countries, when and where the teaching is given, everyone tried to add into their possessions or try to use it as a point to make their conceit up, add to their the ego trip. So it's a very difficult because our way of thinking, our maximization of pleasure, our natural selection is always to increase the desire, to increase the conceit and increase the egocentric idea. E Dhamma also can be a yet another aspect, and if that is the case, the right from the beginning says this is not the meaning of the teaching. That is not the message he is delivering. He says, yes, it is purified. It is very bright. It is very purified. But don't talk it, use it for this wrong way. So therefore, more and more you, when you are advancing along the Dhamma, not only at the trying level, but I am talking about the striving level. When you are putting forward wholeheartedly, definitely Dhamma is going to give a kind of a verifiable results. Whenever that happens, you have to be very humble. You have to understand this whole Dhamma is not for not to use it as one of your possessions or are going to have an ego trip or for the conceit, but instead put it more and more into your practice, more and more into your day-to-day activities, and more into your society and your political, economical and social ways, when and where you put it, the Dhamma understand the profundity, its diversification increases. Otherwise, if you are going to limit it to this limited application, something like the healing and the therapeutic kind of thing, your moral training will be challenged. Your concentration training will be hampered. Your wisdom will be turning back, and ultimately you will be rotating in the same place, just like a whirlpool, or stagnation can happen. So therefore we when we are practicing wholeheartedly, when we are practicing full time, always we have to understand this kullubamang dhammandesitang ajaniyata nittaranathaya no gahanathaya. Oh monks, I have expressed this as a raft just to cross over and not for the purpose of grasping. So this is the difference between the worldly knowledge and this dispensation that the Buddha is prescribing. Worldly knowledge, more and more you accumulate, you grasp it, telling this is me, this is mine, this is my soul. But the Dhamma, yeah, it also has this kind of a nature. You feel like claiming it, it is mine, it is me, and it is for myself. So therefore, whenever we are associating good friends, when we are listening to it, when we are put into practice, all the time you have to understand the danger or misappropriation or misunderstanding of the Dhamma. That is what happened to the venerable Bhikkhu Sati, that he took a wrong view, telling that consciousness is everlasting. Handling only, that kind of thing happened. So all of us have that kind of a danger, so therefore each and every time you have to self-critical, you have to question your own experience and put into practice, or not in one time, two times, thousand times, and again to make sure you are not taken to extremes. Always keep the balance in between or in the middle path. So therefore, when you are advancing, you have to take this lesson. So before going into the depth, the Buddha, at that moment, he says, if you are not to take it, not to adhere into this theory for the sake of theory, if you are not cherishing it, telling that it is me or it is mine, and then only you can put into practice, and if you are taking it in the utility way, in the practical way, pragmatic way, the Buddha says that is the way you really understand, where the really communicate with the Buddha, and after explaining, after clarifying this ground, the Buddha says, Chattaromi Bhikkave Ahara, before giving this clarification, Buddha leading us to see the proximate causes or nutriments or the basic reason for any phenomena, any event to happen. So now, whether you go to the source through the materiality, something like the in-breath and out-breath, or rising and falling, or your physical action like walking meditation, whatever may be, more and more you go to the source, that is not the only method whereby you can trace back to the source. You can go to the source through your feelings also. And in the Satipatthana method, that is the famous sutta explaining the meditation practice basically in this Sutta Pitaka, it says first you start with the materiality, which is verifiable. And once you develop the due mindfulness, you are proceeding, advancing to and applying the same mindfulness to your feelings. Feelings also have its own origin, its middle as the end. So whenever the feelings of feeling pleasurable or painful happen, our mind usually see the middle path. We never see the inception. We never see the beginning of the pleasurable feeling. We never see the beginning of the painful feeling, because our mind is not much refined. It is not much sensitive. So more and more the mindfulness come into being. Once you directed the mind towards the early part of the pleasurable feeling and the painful feeling, you see exactly like the materiality, you can explore into the feelings. And then you can go to the other mental conditions, suppose something like the perception and mental volition, they also have exactly the same way, the origin beginning part, the middle area, that is transitional part, and then the end. And the last one is the consciousness, the very cause, very subject matter of this particular sutta. So therefore, each and every aggregates is an object for one to meditate. But in the gradual process, you start with the materiality. And as you advance, you go to the feelings, and then the mental aspect, and the other rest of the thing. That is how the four foundation of mindfulness placed in an orderly manner. We are, whatever may be the root, the cause, effect, if you go back to the cause, there is a kind of a similarity. Each and everyone, with its materiality or feeling or perception or volitional activity or consciousness, everything starts from the common four nutriments. There is a kind of a universality in the inception, in the nutriments are concerned, as far as the root cause is concerned. So therefore, the Buddha says, out of his omniscient knowledge, there are only four nutriments which are responsible for the arising of the materiality, arising of the feelings, arising of the perception, arising of the volitional activities, and arising of the consciousness. So therefore, the practitioners, or listeners, they must understand on theoretical ground, everything, all the five aggregates started from this common four nutriments. So these things, unless otherwise we listen from the omniscient one or the omnipotent one, we ourselves very difficult to configure it, very difficult to understand. So therefore we must have a certain amount of theory understanding. So Buddha says, Chattaro Mikave Ahara, O monks, there are four nutriments. Bhutanangva, Sattanangva, Titya, Sambhavesi, Vanukai. For the beings, or beings already manifested, or unmanifested beings like which are in the eggs or in the wombs, for their maintenance and for their start, only for kind of foods the Buddha can see out of his omniscient knowledge. He says, Kabalinkarao aharo olarikova sukumuva. The first and foremost is very common one. Everyone knows physical foods or nutrients. It may be gross or subtle. Usually in the food science we call carbohydrate, fat and oil, and the protein. And they can appear as a solid food, liquid food, or maybe as a air. So these things are the food scientists are concerned about. So Buddha also says, this is the first type. Everything for every being, for every being yet to manifest, everyone is depending on these four kinds of foods. Therefore, it is a universal truth. Sabbe satta ahara titika. Each and every being base their life on food. So human beings are not an exception. So that going to give the nutriments. If there is no nutriments in your blood, you go unconscious, fainted. So there won't be any experience. There won't be any kind of a conscious experience in the world. So therefore, you must have a certain amount of nutriments in the blood, nutriments into your body. That is how you being a conscious being, sensuous being. If there is no food, there cannot be any kind of experience. So therefore, even if you, after your birth or before your birth, if there is nutriment, that is a physical nutriment, or this gross nutriment is not there, you can understand the unconscious situation happened, that there is no experience. You can't have any memory. So therefore, first and foremost is the gross food. I think that is, anyone can understand. The second thing is the contact. So this is somewhat very philosophical, very deep reaching kind of phenomena, whereby if you are mindfully observe and if you give a thought in a, what you call inferential kind of a thought, understanding, at a given time for a human being, for example, there are a lot of visual objects appearing and avenuing and bombarding on your eye. And the sound waves are coming and beating upon your eardrums. And the smells are there. Nose is always ready to feel good and bad smells. And the tongue is always waiting to give tastes of the nutrients, and the body is in the tactile sensation. So therefore we have five faculties, but the contact is the one going to decide for a given point, are you going to become a seer or listener or person smelling or tasting or touching. If you can't thin slicing, if you can't to thin slice the time, you may assume as if that at a given time you can see, you can hear, you can smell, you can touch, you can taste. Under such a bewilderment, only the ego can arise. But if you are mindfully going to see, and with the sharp mindfulness, if you are to observe, at a given time only one thing happens. If you are a seer, at that moment you are deaf. You can't, there is no smelling, no taste, no tactile sensation can happen. At 100% you are dealing with visual objects. Immediately next moment you may be a seer or hearer or smelling, whatever may be, but the while one operation is happening, other thing cannot happen. So therefore, simply we can say, towards oneself, huge amount of sensors impingements are coming in, but the mind cannot grasp everything at a time. So therefore, there is a selection. There's a screening, filtering, choice. It is like when you are going to a huge buffet table, you know you can't eat the whole table. It is too much. So you have to select what you prefer. What you select is the one going to contact with your tongue. That's the one you can smell. That's the one you can see. That's the one you can hear. And therefore, the world is also a big buffet diet. A table. But at a given time, the one particular sense impingement is being selected, and once that selection happened through contact only. So therefore, even though there are a lot of impingements are there, only the contact is the one's contact is the one deciding what is to take at a time. So therefore, if you do not go back to the source and see how the contact is deciding as and when you selected one, you are rejecting many. That means if you are going to select one for the moment seeing, you are rejecting hearing, you are rejecting smelling, you are rejecting taste, you are rejecting touch. So therefore in the book, in this very life, Venerable Jnanaponika, he is telling, by selecting and admiring and taking, cherishing of one particular aspect, means you are so bewildered to praise that what you selected, you don't know the rejected part is majority, it is gone forever, you have no chance to experience it. So therefore, you have to understand this phenomena. You have to have a choiceless awareness. Let everything happen. Don't try to select one thing. You have to understand our mind is habitually selecting one thing, that means for the contact. Once the contact happens, that very selected one is overwhelming you, won't allow you to see that selecting ones, you are rejecting many. So, in order to knowing that, if you wish to experience it under your very nose, you just develop mindfulness. As and when thing happens, without the premeditated idea, choicelessly. Or it is, some people call it is the evenly suspended attention and suspended decision. This is a very difficult task, because natural selection is a part and partial of the thing in our evolution. So we are rushing to select something, and whatever we select, we justify and we cherish it. So much so, we get imbibed into that, we completely forget about what we have rejected. So ultimately, we make the whole story out of what we have selected. And the Buddha says, it is only 1/5 of the total phenomena. So therefore, what you are selected is definitely what you tackle, what you touched, what you experience under your very nose. But you fail to understand by selecting what you are rejecting for. So therefore, this very contact is very decisive. It is filtering our experience, deciding our agenda, but you will see you have no governing power. You are working according to someone's agenda. Agenda is fixed by the contact. So therefore, unless otherwise you give attention to the contact, what you do is you make a mistake and find the reasoning to justify the mistake. So what is actually happening is a frustration. Each and every appointment is ending up with a disappointment. Because it is not happening according to your governing capacity. You know, have no executive power. You have no controlling power. But more and more you understand this aspect of contact, you are disheartened. Earlier you thought that everything happened according to my control. I am the house owner. I am the executive. I am governing, I have my governing power. I do something like this and that. That is how we make our constitutions, we make our policies and everything. We have the hierarchical order, and everyone wish to go to the highest of post, most post, and they think they are the controlling power. But the Buddha says, it is completely, of course, later, Westerners, they come to know, it is your how the contact work is something like that your life is already filmed DVD. You can only see it, you have no controlling power. It is not allowed to edit. It is already decided according to likings and disliking. Contact happens. Once a contact happens, you give reasoning. You justify it. But it's the Buddha says, go back to the contact as much as possible and see what is the criteria, selection criteria. Selection criteria is your desire. Selection criteria is your conceit. Selecting criteria is justification of your ego. So whatever the contact is going to do, is going to satisfy either of that, one of that. You are satisfied peace in your desire or your conceit or your egoistic idea. So therefore, knowing, having that understanding, having that theoretical understanding, if you observe, you can see how much you are without an agenda. I will try to cite some example in order to make the point more clear. You can see in a walking meditation, when you select the particular path and you keep on season in a particular way, you may find in the middle area easily you can maintain the track with left leg, right leg, or left leg touch, right leg touch, or it's hardness, softness, cold, heat, that kind of you can feel it. And when you go to the end, you find that trend is being broken because your mood is changing, your posture is changing, so therefore your vulnerability to see things and hear things and feel the other parts of the body can happen. So if you, knowing that if you go there and manage to maintain as much as possible already develop mindfulness, when you come back halfway, again in the middle, you can see while you are walking, while you are mindful on your walking, there are some background thoughts. There are some sounds. And there are other sensations from your other body above, from the other part of the body. When that happens, you know your priority. You must pay the attention to the left leg, touch of the left leg and the right leg. And while it is happening, a lot of other objects are there at the periphery. So if you are going to think about your thinking, you have to forego your left touch, left leg touch and right leg touch. Immediately you become a thinker. And if you are going to pay attention to listening, bird sounds and kind of thing, soon the mind will take the listening object, the sounds, and you are losing the touch with the right leg and the left leg. Soon you are going to feel the other parts of the body, equally your priority goes to the other part and soon you are losing the touch with the soul. So when it's happening, you can see at a time there are a lot of options. But if you early practitioners or so to say the beginners are asked to maintain or adhere basically with the primary object, but never it goes without the challenge. Always it is challenging with background thoughts, sounds and other tactile sensation. When and where it happens, if you are to give priority for one of them, that invariably indicates that you have to forego your left leg and the right leg touching. So when that is happening, you see your point of contact, it is as far as the primary object is concerned, you know where to focus it attention. But all of a sudden, according to the strength of the signal, sometimes without the signal, without the prior notice, mind jump into thinking, jump into listening, jump into other pains, and there you see the contact happens by its own accord, even though if you wish to keep it in your primary object. So this is the very discouraging. This is very disheartening. Whatever the discipline you are going to do, but there are a lot of other factors are coming. But the Buddha says, according to the teaching of the Buddha, according to the Vipassana, this is a very vivid cross-section of your experience. At a given time, it is not one thing happening, many, many things are happening. But what is to take the priority? Sometimes you feel you can decide, most of the time you feel you can't decide. So therefore, keep that issue open as much as possible, and more you to keep the primary object, you can keep the other sounds, pains and thoughts invalid. When and where they come into being, your primary object will be nullified and gone. So when that happens, keep that as much as possible. Once you develop good strength or steadfastness in the mindfulness, you can just let the thinking to happen. You know, now you are no more concerned or no more with the contact with the right leg and the left leg. You are walking like a puppet, but thinking is happening. You came here all the way, leaving aside your job and the near one and dear one and paying so much of time, money, and still thinking. You can think equally back at home. But you see, everything is nullified. The contact has decided. Maybe due to your natural selection. Maybe some other kind of thing. It is already decided. your main object is foregone, gone, and you are well with the thinking. And when you are observing, you can see that you have no executive powers. You have no governing powers. You are implementing someone's or some other agenda. That contact is 1/4 of the agenda maker. So therefore the Buddha says it is one of the nutriments. It is one of the causative factors. It is one of the proximate factors deciding your experience, deciding the phenomena. So whichever may be you contact become your experience. All the others become nullified, invalid. They don't call, they are not recognized as an experience. They recognize as a phenomena. But the Vipassana yogi, while observing the phenomena, while experiencing the primary object or the other object, can see how the contact is working. It is not decided. It is decided in the Nidya. What decides, bring you, take you for a ride. Whatever you decide, you are cherishing. Whatever you are deciding, you are justifying. Whatever you are deciding, you bewildered. That is to say, you don't know how much you are foregone by selecting that particular thing. Even the primary object, if you select and if you will, with the right leg touch and the left leg, then you have to understand that a huge other things can happen. They have to forego if you have to cherish the primary object. So if you take that into the in-breath and out-breath in sitting meditation, there also sometimes you can feel comfortably you are sitting. Breath is sometimes face to face it, but still you can hear sounds. You can hear inner thoughts or distant thoughts happening somewhere. And you can feel the body, the touching on your cushion. So still you can see the in-breath and out-breath touching also there. So that the contact theoretically accepted. In-breath and out-breath is the primary object. Others are there waiting at the doorstep to get a chance. When the moment you give it one thing, the in-breath and out-breath disappear and that going to take an upper hand and you will be a thinker, you will be a listener, you will be an experience of other kind of thing. So when that happens, your vulnerability, your susceptibility towards the contact, you can see very little saying you have, unless otherwise you know what is happening under the carpet, what is happening behind the screen. So in order to take the situation under your control, in order to master the situation, what the Buddha suggests is, you have to go deep while amidst of all thinking, amidst of all sounds, amidst of all the other distractions, keep the track as much as possible with the breath, without much paying heed to the distractions. And if you go to the subtle part of the breath, and if the breath become going to subtle, and the day, even if you can't touch, even if you can't feel the breath, now imagine what is the kind of mentality you are going to have. Maybe at the peripheral level, some little signal to indicate you are living, the subtle breath also there. At the periphery level, sound waves also there, thoughts also there, and indications are there that you are not dead, you are not sleepy, you are not unconscious, but still mind won't select a single one, completely independent of the external objects. And there, everything is according to the quantum jargon, everything is a possibility, nothing manifested. Because contact has not taken place yet. It, the contact either can select thinking or sounds or pain, or you can do forced breathing and get the breathing, whatever may be, but nothing manifested, everything remains as a potential, a possibility. In that moment, you are not biased. You have not selected anything. So therefore, mind is in the more pure, more original, more primordial form. Yeah, you can see impingements are there, but the contact has not taken place yet. But kind of uncertainty is there. Kind of a vacuum you feel, because so far throughout the memory, when and where the possibility happened, your mind is getting hooked up with something. And that make the consciousness, that make your experience, that make your phenomena. But now you've gone to a place where the phenomena not taken place yet. The experience is not 100%. All the things are possibilities and you have the full potential, but you never commit into. You never collapse into one particular thing, and when and where that happens, you can say you are fairly mastering the contact. That is to say, you keep the mind as much as in the center. At the periphery level, so much of thing happened. Moment you thought about thinking, you become a thinker. Moment you are going to listen, you become a listener. Otherwise, you will be a person feeling. Or as much as that is there, you can see how difficult for you to keep that thought moment. It is like tightrope walking. Mindfulness at that level is the highest kind of mindfulness, most steadfast mindfulness, the most matured mindfulness. Because so far you maintain the mindfulness with the help of an object, now you are maintaining the mindfulness without the help of an object. It is like that when you are learning how to ride a push bike, you know at the beginning how hard you are handling the two handles with your hands, because to get the balance, even not enough, you have to get the second person or some other methods to keep the cycle, to gain kind of a balance and the speed. But once you little train, you can easily understand, not necessarily to handle the handle so hard, you can just by keeping the hand in the soft way, still you can get the balance. And while you are training further, you can see by single hand, you can manage the bicycle. But you still further, you can release both the hands. And still you can balance the bicycle by your body weight. So that is a skillfulness, exactly the way you take the primary object. You take your in-breath and out-breath in sitting, or left and the right in the walking. And be with it. As much as possible, with the non-reactional way, with the choiceless way. Let the other things come to happen, going to come and interrupt you. Don't fight with it. Don't try to get rid of that. Don't try to follow them also. And that, in that way, one day you will learn the art, how to make the breath subtle and subtle and subtle. How to make the breath face to face. How to make the breath more familiar. Amidst of all the kind of things, the day you to see the end of the in-breath and out-breath, there you find the contact has not been taken place, everything remains as a possibility, but there is a kind of a balance. At the beginning, it will take 30-40 minutes for you to calm down the breath and go to this kind of a mystic experience, where the mind is, you become mindful about the mind state which has not been contacted with the particular object, so it is keeping in the center. And that experience, very difficult to call as an experience, and because it has no particular sign, it has no particular contact, but the feel, it is something like suspending in the middle. So this is the point where the breath becomes subtle and subtle. But when you are mastering again and again, you can see the very end of the out-breath. First start at the beginning, end of the out-breath also exactly the same phenomena. Breathing ceases to exist. Next, in-breath has not occurred yet. In between the gap, there also sounds can happen, thinking can happen, pains can happen. Now, without a reaction, if you can maintain the balance, few breaths time, you can go to that kind of a balance. So this is the, what happens usually in a continuous full-time retreats, because your mind is, your mood is always in the meditative mode. If you are successful, yesterday's experience is cumulatively helpful for the today's experience, and both of them are experience of the next day experience, ultimately soon you see, you find lot of distractions or objects or whatever may be impingement you may find. But untrained mind is chasing behind something and get hooked up with. But you are trained and you are appreciating so much, you never promote the mind to get coupled with the object or any impingement. Try to keep it is in the center. And while keeping, you can understand, you can see the number of possibilities, but nothing committed. Nothing collapsed. So there are that experience, for the first time you can understand, mind is seeing everything and without hooked up with something. Soon you contacted that particular thing going to overwhelm yourself. And then onward you will appreciate and you will chase it, cherishing it, and that is how you become bewildered. So therefore, if you are to understand the contact also as a kind of a nutriment, you have to start from the gross contact and meditate it through to the subtle and lead it to the subtlest and still maintain choicelessness or choiceless awareness or non-reaction or unassuming way, and then only you can see the, you are using the whole brain or you are using the whole mind, because it is so alert, so much of impingements are there, you are not going to second. They are suggesting many things, you are not going to second it, and it is like a tightrope walking. That is the what we have never experienced in this sensuous world. As far as we are contacted with the senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue and the body, it is very partial. It's very imbalanced. It's always promoting the desire, the conceit and the egoistic idea. But whenever it comes back to the center, unmanifested or uncollapsed or just maintaining at the possibility level, you can see for the first time, mind try to, as if going to stand without the help of an object, just like tightrope walking. And this possibility, this kind of a caliber, is possible only for human beings. This is not common for other animals. It is not common for other beings. So therefore, humans have come up to such a junction, combination in the evolution, so the mind can stay in this very life without the help of an object, without the help of a sign. So whenever that happens, mind feel like isolated, mind feel like outcasted, mind feel like eccentric. And therefore, not only experiencing that very moment, but appreciation of the same moment and keep the continuity of the same moment is completely a challenge. It's completely a radical thing. It's a unconventional thing. So therefore, in the theoretical way, in the talks and kind of thing, someone can lead it to that and he or she has to verify that very thought moment by under the nose experiencing. And once it has been tasted, once it's been touched, he or she has to find the ways and means how to maximize it. That means how to appreciate it. And how to appreciation, how many thought moments I can maintain the mind, just like in a tightrope walk. Just like a candle wick, candle flame, burning without flickering. As far as there are side currents, the cross currents, is flickering. How much it can keep maintained without a flicker. So that is the only moment worth calling living, which is 100%. All the other time, our mind is either appreciating one of the other thing, and therefore rejecting many. So therefore, our experience is very partial. So a huge space for the doubt to arise, entertain the doubt. So therefore, it is justifiable. So in order to get rid of the doubts, not only by the physical foods, you have to consider this contact also as a food. Try back as much as possible, whenever the time permits, with the help of the mindfulness, go and stay in the middle without giving a bias, giving a biased approach to any of the signals. And when and where possible, when you go there, you see like you are gone from the gravitational sphere to the non-gravitational sphere. In the gravitational sphere, you know always it is pulling to the center. Egoistic idea is there. But whenever you go non-gravity, you are just floating. So how much you have to train, first you have to recognize it, and then you have to live up to it, and when you go there, ultimately, when you become, if you wish to be a spiritual being, that must be your real home. All the experiential world that we have in through the ear, the nose, the tongue, or any senses, are so partial. So therefore, now we feel that experience has something strange, and what we experience with the senses as real. But that is the core human experience. Whenever you become a spiritual, you will understand that very moment where that everything is a possibility, not committed. That is a spiritual experience. And periphery-wise, you have the potentials, you have the possibilities, but you are not committed as much as possible. Even if you are committed, no harm, because that is what you already experienced. So try to keep at least in a balance or to maximize this contact-free or kind of a liberated kind of mind as much as possible. So that is how you can understand how the consciousness trying to get one or the other signal and justify itself. How the volitional activity of creativity and connectivity and all the kind of thing always try to catch one or the object and justify itself. And how our perception is try to catch one or the other object and cognize it and recognize it and refine it and establish your memory. And how the feelings, when and where sound or this thing happen, pleasurable or painful feeling, immediately come and suggest and make a story. And the material come into being. So before that happening, before it manifestation, it is in a primordial form as far as the contact is mastered. So that is two-way task. One thing is theoretically understanding the point. Second thing is maximizing the same thing or familiarizing the same thing. And the last, the end of it is considering that as your real home, there are no friction. There is no tension. There is no frustration happen. But from the frustration to non-frustration, gross signal to signal, subtle signal, ego-centric idea to non-egoistic idea, so it is slowly, gradually has to happen. Otherwise, our mind can't comprehend it. So therefore, slowly, day by day, as far as the mindfulness is developed, as far as the mindfulness is maximized, you, whether you like it or not, this is the way you are coming back to the source. So that is what I thought of sharing with you all as far as the contact is concerned. So I will take time, what are the other foods, the two types that we have explained, as the time permits, tomorrow onward. So thank you very much for listening. So we are make time, take this time to share the minutes with all the seen and unseen beings, as well as our relatives and dear and near ones, and to last but not the least to remind our objective and to straightening our objective. May all the merits and the skillfulness help in all these three ways. With that idea, we are going to recite the Pali stanza in a traditional way. Ettavata jagammehi sambhataṁ puñya sampadaṁ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jagammehi sambhataṁ puñya sampadaṁ sabbe bhūta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jagammehi sambhataṁ puñya sampadaṁ Sabbe satta anubodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Aka satta ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasana. Aka satta ca bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desana. ආකාශත්තා ච බුම්මත්තා දීවානාගා මහිත්‍තිකා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මං පරං ඉදං හෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා වන්තු ඥාතියෝ ඉදං හෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා වන්තු ඥාතියෝ ඉදං හෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා වන්තු ඥාතියෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමී බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිපානපත්තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමී බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිපානපත්තිය ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමී බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්‍තිය සාදු සාදු සාදු